B2. Number 16A.
Because we don't present the subject logically. We go, therefore, and say, now what is the Christ? And we get 200 answers. I don't know how many passages where Mr. Seti says Christ is. This and this and this. And one statement next to the other seems to contradict itself. We'll see that next week when we go through the levels. We'll go deeper into that, but just now, taking it in order to explain the structure, we can see that what Mrs. Eddy did was the only right thing to do. Well, theology will say that Christ is Jesus or the Son of God, just one answer. Mrs. Eddy said, I give you 16 answers, or I give you 20 answers, and all those together, when you structure them together, you have it. You have it. And so it is with any spiritual concept. Can you understand me now, always a little bit more, about what I said in the first hour? Instead of having dots, instead of having points, atomistic points, and say, this is matter, or this is the problem of mortal mind, or this is the problem of divine mind, we cannot answer that until we put to that one point a whole system of reference around it. Then we can determine what it is. And this is today, in every science, called the structural definition of something. The structural definition. And Mrs. Eddy, she always has seen all these things 100 years before the scientists see. She has seen that she must give to every of these capitalized terms a structural answer. And put it in the structure of the 4 times 4, at least. So, if I want to know what mind is, I can know it by going through all the reference and see what the ideas is. But if I want to know the whole operational sense of mind, I must know the structure through the structure, through the thought. Then I have an operational sense of mind. And so it is with the synonymous term, so it is with matter, so it is with mortal mind, and therefore, instead of asking what is matter, and you can read back through the last 40, 50 years and say what Kimball said what matter is, and then one of his high lights answered, well, then put into a golden frame and passed on over years and years. Kimball said, he gave a new definition of what matter is. And so it was with Thich Nhat Hanh. He was asked, what is matter? Well, he said, it is a perishable concept of the imperishable. Well, a wonderful answer, I know, but not matter. It's just one answer. One out of these little holes here. Put here. See, but instead that we go and take one of these pet answers and hang to it, we really should go to the textbook and go right through and look up every statement she makes, right from the first to the last page, what she makes about matter, and try to see what is the spiritually scientific touch or tone she gives in each one of the chapters. And that's the great thing, that she never repeats itself, actually. Except when she has to, as I said this morning, except perhaps when she has to remind ourselves of something which she said before and so on. But you feel at once when you go through the text, which are the new things she wants to put over, and which are the reminders and so on, which she brings in occasionally. And so it is with the question of evil, for instance. That's why I have taken just evil, and on your next matrix you have, I have taken the subject of evil. Because, you know very well, evil is a great question. And everyone asks her, what is evil if it doesn't exist? And so on. The one says, you don't have to handle evil. The other says, you have to handle evil. The one says, you have to overcome evil. And the other says, don't be so silly. Evil doesn't exist, so you don't need to overcome it. Well, which answer is right? They are all right. Practically all of them are right. But they should be put together into a whole framework, into a structure. So, instead of always searching through all the unauthorized notes and class notes of other people and other teacher, I always go back to the textbook. For me, the textbook is enough authority to get clear about something. I don't need to have hundreds and hundreds and thousands of unauthorized or unauthentic letters from Mrs. Eddy and statements from Mrs. Eddy and statements from Kimball and statements from Bicknell Young and from this and that in order to know something more. The textbook says everything. Much better. But it must be taken as a whole. So the question of evil, for instance, why should we cite past the textbook and ask a teacher or ask somebody what he thinks evil is and expect from him one answer? Why not go to the textbook and get all answers, which together form the structural answer? So here again, if you take this page of the evil, it's really an evil matrix, so to say. And you can see, I don't want to go deeply into it, just quickly, because I promised you that that survival should be dealt with now at the end of this hour. But you can see the first categories, the word, as all deals with the question of evil, to free ourselves from evil. See, it doesn't say there is no evil. It says the proposition is for you that you jolly well have to make up your mind to free yourself from evil. Then she shows that through prayer, atonement and so on. You see, first, the desire to be delivered from evil. Deliver us from the evil, from the evil one, you know, in prayer. So Mrs. Eddy is very tender. She doesn't always start right at the beginning from the top and just wipe out everything which is not right. She says, all right, I know you reader, you have you want to know something about evil and how to deal with it. All right, have the desire to get rid of evil. So it starts with prayer, the desire to be delivered from evil. A dominant Eucharist is even stronger than that and constantly puts forward the command to cast out evil. Full of that thing that Jesus came with the command, cast out evil, as if they could exist. Can you see that in the word column, word vertical, Mrs. Eddy deals with the question of evil as if it would be something. That's the touch of it, her motherhood sense of it, which says, I know you believe in evil, so slowly I get you out of it. But she doesn't write, say, at the beginning, there is no evil. Evil is nothing. Evil is neither place, person, nor thing. She said, no, you must have the desire to be freed from evil. Therefore, in the second chapter, go and cast out evil. So we stopped in the middle of that matrix on the question of evil. We have taken the word, and now the Christ, you see at once, the moment we come to the Christ chapter, then Mrs. Eddy takes up the question, has evil power? Has evil a Christ? Or has it? And so in those next four chapters, she deals with the question that evil has no power. That evil has no Christ. And naturally, right at the beginning of Animal Magnetism, she would state that, and we find there her statement that evil is no power, no action, no law. See, it has no Christ. Then, when we come to science, theology, and medicine, she shows that God, exempt from evil, casts out evil. God casts out evil. Look right to the left of it. There you have atonement and Eucharist. And there is the command to cast out evil. That's the word. You see the law, Moses' law, to cast out evil. The moment you come to the Christ, it is God casts out evil. Can you see the Christ? very different. Now, we can't say the one is right and the other is wrong. The one is a good answer and the other is not so good an answer. They are both of same value if they are seen in the structure. Then in physiology, she speaks about the subject that evil falls back upon itself and can give no dominion. Can you hear again Christianity? See? That evil falls back on itself. It cannot reflect and broaden out universally. That it is falling back on itself. That it destroys itself and can give no dominion. Footsteps of truth. Evil is not mightier than good. And so the evil power here is brought down to the point where it just says that evil is not mightier than good. Can you see? All this have to do with power, with might, with power, with action. Has it action? Has it law? Has it force? Yes, the only force it has is to fall back on itself, to destroy itself, so to say. Then we go further to the Christianity sense, the chapter creation, and so on. The Christianity we have epitomized to demonstrate the superiority of good over evil. Now Christianity, which has to do with the universe, a universe of good or of evil, is now showing that really in the Christianity sense the good must be mightier, superior to evil. In the chapter on creation she says that mortals let themselves be used by evil. She first begins to start that way and says, you know, evil is not using mortals, but mortals let them be used by evil. Taking quite away the sense that evil has a Christianity, that evil can have a mortal, that evil can use mortals. That's what we fear in the human belief, that evil can use any mortal to do any trick. And there she says, no, no, we must see that mortals let themselves be used by evil. Then in the signs of being, the somethingness of good demonstrates the nothingness of evil. See, now comes the Christ in and says, good has that demonstrative power, the Christ power, that it can demonstrate good and therefore also demonstrate the nothingness of evil. And so we come to some objections answer, and she says, denying that God either knows evil, made evil, or cooperates. No, I can't read my own things. The objection is here, you see, that we should deny that God either knows evil, made evil, or cooperates with evil. Now I read it right. Cooperates with evil. So here again we see that Christianity sense where we see we mustn't attribute God to evil and see that evil has behind itself not God. See, Christianity we have seen is always showing the focal point of the phenomena. Has that phenomena the whole of God behind it or not? If it is idea, it has the whole of God behind it. If something is good, it is good because the whole God is good. If it is evil, we must also see that evil therefore has no authority in God. Therefore it is no cooperation with God. There is no that God never made evil nor knows evil. Then in the Christian Science practice she really says to avail ourselves of the supremacy of good over evil. See, here it is now to avail ourselves through ideas, through the understanding of science, so that evil just has no chance to operate. All right. We go to the next one, science. Here, science gives the sense of proof. By proving good, evil is disproved. Now we get nearer and nearer to the nothingness of evil by showing we can really only handle evil by being good, so to say. Only by proving good, we disprove evil. We don't have to start to disprove evil. We have to start by proving good. Therefore, by understanding the signs of being, we disprove that evil has any say. And so, gives us the scientific sense of handling evil, no more by saying, cast out evil, have superiority over evil, have ascendancy over evil. Now, she says, don't bother about evil, bother about good. The more you bother about good, the less the question of evil enters in. In teaching Christian Science, she brings out the sense that by resisting and exposing and denouncing and condemning evil, the nothingness of evil can be proved. So she begins always in teaching, gives the way to the scientific fact, and so she says, well, expose evil, denounce evil, and so on. Don't make anything of evil. And only in that way, the nothingness of evil can be proved. If we start by making something of evil and saying, I have a great problem, people come along and say, oh, I have a great problem to work out. You know, I have a very, very great problem to work out. You know, I really have a great problem to work out. And you just can't see how they build up and build up and build up and build up the tenacity of error. And so they first build up the tenacity of error, and then they try to cure it. Teaching Christian Science comes, this is not science. Science is that you don't build up error, but that you show its nothingness, that you go out denouncing it and analyzing it as nothing, and only then you have a chance to prove the nothingness of error. Only then. Not by first building it up. Recapitulation comes and says, in God, good, the all in all, there is no place for evil. So she gives the higher sense and says, alright, if our consciousness is just full of God, good, then our consciousness has no place for evil. And still further in Genesis, she says, well, the divine law exterminates scientifically the belief in evil by reducing it to its nothingness. Quite wonderful. There she says, if you understand the first record of creation, that is the law of annihilation to the second record of creation. You remember that the first record of creation has seven stages, and perhaps you know that the second record of creation has seven stages of how evil builds up and builds up and builds up, and then comes to the point where it's explodes and is falling back on itself, also through seven stages. So that's in Genesis. And she just shows that in the measure, you see, and in the measure that we understand the divine law, in the measure as we understand being in its structure, the more the whole structure of evil falls back on itself. That's the only method. First she said, don't build up error in teaching. You can't start by building error and then try to overcome it. So don't build it up, make nothing of it, as little of it. Don't have all that self-pity and self-aggrandizement of the mortal and making a lot of evil and of a problem. Don't talk always about the problem. People have sometimes that attitude that if they have a big problem, which may be for them a very big problem, that they think everybody should know it. The moment they meet somebody else, they just tell them all about the problem. They repeat that about 1,000 times a year and are quite astonished that it doesn't solve. Instead of shutting up and saying, well, I can't solve a problem by constantly repeating it and filling it up and filling it up and filling it up so that everybody knows about it and everybody pities me about it and so on. That's teaching, the chattel teaching. It says, don't fill it up, make nothing of it. If you make nothing of it, that recapitulation comes and says, well, then you do have to do something with your consciousness. If you don't build up error, then build up, if you don't build up evil, then build up good. And the more you build up good, the less there is room in you for evil. And Genesis comes and says, and this is the law that exterminates error. Only by building up the consciousness of good, of the signs of good, the law of good, the system of good, the structure of good, if we concentrate on that, then all these errors just go by themselves. And finally, in the Apocalypse, by understanding good, evil is self-destroyed. That chapter of Huxley is always a crown in the textbook, always. Think how there she says that the angel came to John and said, look here, here are seven vials full of the last plague, which Mrs. Eddy interprets as the sum total of human misery. You can't have more evil than what the angel gives you. But it's an angel that says, come. She didn't, the revelator didn't say, and I saw the devil. And he said to me, come along, I give you the seven vials full of the last plagues. He could see that it was an angel. And so John turned to it. He didn't drink it. He didn't drink it, but he saw the Lamb's life. Love wedded to its own idea. That's the point. Where we are so transparent against evil that the whole human misery can be presented to us, and it just doesn't make any impression on us. Because our whole attitude is always to go and see the unity of love and love's idea. Love at work, principle at work, principle at operation. And so we don't have always that sense, golly, I must be owned by God against animal magnetism, right and left and around every corner, animal magnetism is lurking and just trying to play a trick on me. When we come to this chapter, we are absolutely free of that stuff. We remember those seven vials full of the last place, and we remember the dragon fighting with Michael. You say Michael? Yes. And Mrs. Eddy lifts it right out of the text of Revelation and puts instead of Michael, Gabriel. Gabriel doesn't appear in Revelation, but Mrs. Eddy puts that story right out of the Revelation of St. John, and instead of the Michael puts the Gabriel sense. The Michael, which always wants to fight with evil, with the dragon. The Gabriel that only looks at its own idea, the idea of love. A scientist never battles with error. A scientist, any scientist, in physics, where it is, he only concerns the idea of its principle, and not error. And that is the final resolution of evil. Well, I went through this matrix very quickly because by now you feel tired about all these matrices, and all what I wanted to show how such a matrix can be an enormous help to us, and especially to show that we shouldn't be satisfied with single answers. I think that time should be over. You know, that time, you know, the practitioner is like a little deity. And all these patients come creeping, crawling along to the feet of the practitioner and put a difficult question, and then they listen what the oracle of the is saying, you see. And it's just one sentence. You know, dear, God is all, or you know, dear, God is love, and so on. And you can read all those many, many books that come out from the dissenters of Christian Science, because only they can really write about things that matter. And they all are concerned with those questions, what is mortal mind, what is matter, and so on. And they give their pet answers, be it from Bicknell Young, be it from Shaw Cook, or be it from Kimball, or Dickey, or any one of those big calibers which were in the movement. But they are just one answer. I don't care 2 cents about it. I like to go to one authority, and that's the textbook. And the textbook doesn't give a pet answer. The textbook gives a whole structure of answer. It gives many answers. Superficially seen, some of the answers contradict each other. Superficially seen. Seen in its structure, they show that they all belong together at the right place. Deliver us from the evil one, in the first chapter. Later, there is no evil. Well, what is right? Cast out evil, in one chapter. In the other chapter, God does that job for you. Don't bother about it. Which is right? Both are right. See, we are coming out of that dangerous period which started with the Greeks, with the Greek philosophers, who for the first time put up, instead of the monism of being, the dualistic thing. And we have an heritage of 2,500 years of dualistic thinking, where either something is right and therefore everything else is wrong. Either something is, and then it can't be something else. And today, naturally, thinkers begin to see that logic, which is a dualistic logic, is wrong. That there is a multi-valued logic, namely that something can be something, and at the same time something else, without contradicting it. Matter can either be seen as mass, or it can be seen as energy. Can be either seen as matter or as mind for the physicist. These do no more contradict. Up to this 1925, these two statements were contradictory. From that time on, where they could see that they are, that something can be something else at the same time, they began to see that they had a far too limited concept of being, and began to see that there is not a two-value logic, that there is a three-value logic, a multi-value logic, until finally they began to realize, and begin to realize, that on top of everything is a one-value logic, one mind, but that one mind can be stated in 16 values, has a 16-value logic in it, and each one is right. Not one excludes the other, in spite that humanly seen or with our old logic, they contradict each other. That's what happens in the whole world, not only with us, the whole world. A completely new consciousness, a comprehensivist consciousness comes up, which takes in not these pet answers. The answer what is matter is answered by a structure. And so the same thing Mrs. Eddy has seen long, long ago. Long, long ago. Yes. Now, that's the end of the structural consciousness of the matrices. And I'm very, very impressed how you took it. Very impressed. You haven't the faintest idea how impressed I am. I was never able in my whole life to present what I have presented these 3 days. Never. I guess if I had come 5 years ago to you, you couldn't have taken it. It only shows that the whole consciousness in the world is moving and is changing, and that that whole universal consciousness is moving so fast and is willing to take in new views that you are willing to accept that. Because it's terrific to me that I could present this without too much resistance. This would have not been possible before. And therefore I'm going to show you something which for 10 years I tried to show, and nobody could see it. And I tried on you. Are you willing to have another half hour?